Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure.
You just got really loud.
Well, I was really quiet before and you were loud.
What was that?
I don't know. Am I louder than you from your perspective? Or
from inside my head, I'm the loudest.
Okay.
Well, I'm...
Not just, loudest, louder.
No, I'm the loudest. I'm louder than everyone.
Everyone?
In my own head, yeah.
That's an interesting thing that we could explore at some length.
The voice
so then, when did you first realize that you hated your father?
My voices in my head are louder than yours.
Oh, okay.
Somehow you were German and I was Norwegian. I don't know how that happened.
Well, that's cool. You are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach. You know, it's interesting. You are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach. That's an interesting statement of fact.
It is a statement of fact. If we can say it and you can hear it, then it's true. If you can't hear it, then it's not true at all.
Right. We could go into a logical loop there,
too.
Yes,
there's some logic in there somewhere. I don't know where it is, but something is involved logically.
There's something in there. I'm not sure what it is. And the Personal Wealth Coach is not just a radio presentation. I love that.
Well,
but wait, there's more.
It's a mild-mannered
Ginsu Knives
investment advisory firm.
Right, a mild-mannered investment advisory firm located in Salado, Texas, except that we are the principals of the firm and we're not in Salado.
No, we're in Temple right
now. We're actually in Temple, so that's very confusing too. Anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach is actually a investment advisory firm, wealth management firm, I think is the proper term that's used for that now in social circles.
Wealth management? Is that what we're calling it?
We're a wealth management firm. And we do that kind of thing. And we also come here on Saturday mornings for some reason that I really don't completely understand and do a radio show or a radio presentation.
It's not a show. We're not showing anything.
Right. And we have telephone numbers that you can call in here. Somebody has already called the 1-866-597-1400 number, which means they're really eager to ask or talk about
or
something.
Or tell us to shut up and go back to playing bagpipes.
Go back to bed, yeah. And the other number is?
773-1400. That's local. It's amazing stuff.
And we just reverse the telephone numbers the way we give them. So.
Yeah, well,
and you were flexible enough to do that. I'm really impressed with you.
It's yoga.
Okay. Yoga Berra?
Right.
Okay. Anyway, call her on 866-597-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. How are you doing today?
I think we're okay.
I think so, too.
We've got to check on it, though.
Okay. Well, listen, I just need to throw this out here because I haven't heard it talked about anywhere. They've got this big dog and pony show about guns. Listen, to fix the school situation, we need to arm our teachers and our workers with tasers. They have tasers, have 35-foot range, 3-shot capacity. They're available to the police right now. And then in a school setting, 35-foot, at least our teachers would have an opportunity to stop an idiot with a gun or with a knife or anything else.
That's I agree with that.
That's what I wanted to put out there, but nobody's talking about it. That's why I called you.
The whole discussion wanders around in very strange directions from both sides, and it's far more emotional than it is rational. I tend to agree that is a very, very
makes
good
sense.
Suggestion. But of course, then you have to train the teachers on how to use the tasers, and you have to secure them in such a way that the students can't get you to them and use them on the teachers.
You know what's going to be amazing about this, though? Teachers generally dread the going to the conferences for training of specific types of new methods of using their.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would enjoy this particular training.
Mm-hmm.
And the good part about this is, as opposed to arming them with weapons, which I really don't have a problem one way or the other, the teachers, as long as they're trained. But if they miss, there's no through the wall.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
If they hit an unintended target, guess what? Everybody gets up and goes home.
Yeah, and I think that's probably an excellent idea.
I'm a little confused, actually, that people talk about this this subject, and they talk about having armed people on campuses, and there's this big debate of whether or not it should happen. I was out of high school a bit early, but I went to Killeen High School, and there were police officers on campus regularly, all the time. That's just, you know,
yeah, but
they had police officers on campus.
But you don't see them in elementary schools.
Well, that's because they're invisible.
Oh.
No.
Well.
No, I mean, that is the point that I'm coming to there, is that there's this big debate about whether or not we should do it, and people saying, no, it's too dangerous. Wait a minute. We've been doing it a long time. When was the last time a police officer had his gun taken in a school situation and violence happened? That would have been big news.
Of course, the police officer is pretty well trained at hanging on to the gun.
Mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm.
The and the issue with police officers in elementary schools is, when you consider the number of hours that they're open and everything else, you're going to have to hire three police officers. And as the paper reports today, the schools are bracing for cutbacks
yes.
in federal funding now.
Yes.
And to train and hire three police officers, somebody's got to pay for it someplace. And that's probably, you really want to know, there's several keys to this. First off, obviously, people having weapons where you can kill a whole lot of people in a very short period of time is problematic. The other thing is, that the expense of arming or training or, and I'm going to tell you a fact, there's going to be an awful lot of teachers who simply are not going to carry a handgun.
Won't happen.
You could threaten them with prison and they still wouldn't carry a gun, and they have no business carrying a gun. In matter of fact, you could have a school full of elementary teachers, none of whom would carry a gun, no matter what you did. So I think the taser solution probably is an excellent idea.
Upside of this is your response time. Police can only respond a certain amount of time.
Sure, right.
All right. If people in the school were armed with tasers, they are on site. They're first responders until the police get there.
Right.
Because in 15 minutes, you can kill a lot of people.
Yeah, and I believe
in corporal. I completely agree with you.
I believe in corporal punishment. I experienced it in school, and I think it was a...
What has that got to do with what we're talking about?
Well, I think you could do a dual purpose here and use the taser for corporal punishment as well.
No,
it'd be great.
No. You're talking about electroshock therapy for teenagers?
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
I don't think that would be viable.
I don't think it would go over.
Yeah,
I don't want to
do that.
But I really think that you have an excellent idea. I can't think of any downsides to it. Obviously, if somebody's wearing the right kind of clothing, you can't hit them in the middle of the body with a taser, but you can always hit them in the face.
Ouch.
No, actually, the clothing does not inhibit as much as you think it will. I mean, there's some range of it, but it doesn't prevent as much as you think it would.
Yeah, I think probably if a gunman came into a school and about four people zapped him with a taser in short order,
yeah, I think it'd be pretty done.
He'd probably have to lay around and wait for the police to show up.
Yeah, he'd be on the ground and he'd be unarmed, and the police would just come pick him up, take him to jail.
Don't tase me, bro.
You're making entirely too much sense. You realize that?
I know. I understand. I've already called the governor's office, lieutenant governor's office, Dan Brewer in Arizona.
Yeah, but you can't. The problem with a rational conclusion, a rational suggestion like this, is it doesn't stoke the highly emotional, angry people on either extreme of the argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And so the people in the middle who are rational say, oh, that's a very good idea. But you see, they're not the people who are really, really angry and jumping up and down and screaming.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the markets. I knew I could segue into what we want to talk about.
Squeaky wheels get on my shopping cart. Usually would say get the grease, but I think they just get on my
shopping cart. Thank you for the recommendation. We agree with you.
Okay, try to get it out there. Somebody's got to start talking about it.
I agree with you.
Talking about it, we can make it happen.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call.
That was cool.
Yeah.
A positive call at the beginning of our show.
It had not a whole lot to do with the economics.
Well, yeah, it is, because whoever makes tasers, you know, the companies that make tasers obviously would see their earnings go up dramatically if teachers were issued tasers.
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty cool.
Tasers for teachers. We could have a motto here.
Yeah.
That would be a good thing to start. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
So, anything interesting happened during the week?
Yes. I have been reading this carefully. It appears that the folks over at Dow have been breaking things.
Well, you know,
the breaking records at the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Have you ever heard the thing, you're like a broken record?
I have heard that. I didn't think it was a good thing, and yet they're doing it. I don't know.
And you know, I like the way the trader put it in Barron's. He said the headline is Dow surges to record highs.
It surges to record highs.
Finishes up 2.2%. That's a surge, obviously.
That's a big surge. And we need surge suppressors for the Dow.
What would they actually do? So we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Sir, and Judy, just want to let Jake know we're listening this morning.
Oh, well, good.
Thank you very much.
All right, buddy.
Okay, bye-bye.
I'm very sorry that you have to do that.
Was that the paradox?
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, okay.
People call in to inform us that they're listening because it is in doubt. Generally, when I speak to people, they don't listen.
I've noticed that when I speak to you, you don't normally listen, too. So.
But what were you saying? Again?
Right, exactly. Anyway, we're approaching the point where, by my reckoning, Jeff McClure's reckoning, which is, of course, very important in the overall scheme of things.
Yes, everyone should take notice.
We're about to emerge from a bear market. And I realize that, and just as a
depends
matter,
on how you measure
a matter of clarity, a bear market is a period of time in which the market is down.
Well, that's not the technical definition of it.
Yes, the technical definition is the time it's going down. But from my perspective,
most people don't look at it that way.
I refer to it as a market decline. And during the time, between the time when you can go back to a certain point in time.
During the time period
where you can go back to a certain period of time and have invested and lost money.
I need to write that. I think I need a timetable for all the times that you said time.
You have a table in front of you.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And as far as I'm concerned, I look at the, quote, down markets, the what do you want to call them, bear markets or stock recessions or whatever.
Until recovery, I think that's a bear market.
Until they get back up to the point where they used to be at their high point and we continue upward, I consider that to be a market depression. Just like a depression in the land doesn't end when you get to the bottom of it, you have to go back up the other side before you're out of the depression. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average has obviously reached the level and surpassed that level where it briefly was in 2007, which was only slightly higher from where it was in 2000. Now, if we get just a 15-point rise in the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index.
By point, do you mean percentage points?
No.
You mean 15 points of
15
numbers.
Of its, you know, it's sitting up, let's see, where is the...
14,397.
Yeah,
0.07.
Yeah, 14,397.
0.07 is very important.
Yeah, so if it goes, but if it gets up to where it was, which is on its scale, 15 points, that closed at 15,51.18 on Friday, according to me. The S&P 500.
Oh, yeah, S&P. Yes, I thought you were talking about the Dow still.
No,
yes. 15,51.18.
We need 15 more points on the S&P 500 to take it into its previous record.
To 15,67?
Mm-hmm. Thereabouts. I don't remember the exact number. But the point is, once we get there, then we are recovered nominally. Boy, I love it when I can say things like that. It sounds really cool.
Upholstery people do that often.
Nominal recovery.
They recover a lot of things, yes.
And then we can get back on track. And interestingly enough, now that this is to me humorous, now that from the 2009 point where we here on this radio presentation said, hey, this is the bottom.
Yep.
We were very, very firm about that. The market has risen 117%.
Oh, my.
And in the last 3 weeks, for the first time since then, the inflows into equity mutual funds have actually been positive.
Right. It's kind of funny. At the bottom, people were still convinced that there was lots more bottom. And we were saying, this is it. This is the bottom. This is 2009. You said 117% up from then.
Yeah. The S&P 500 is up 117%.
This is one of those great things about memory. Because most of our listeners think back to that point and they say, oh, yeah, I pretty well knew that was going to be the bottom, too. The problem with that is that most people didn't know that that was the bottom, didn't understand that that was a point at which recovery started. It's that we play tricks on our memory. We have 20/20 hindsight, and we also revise our memory to make us knowledgeable of it. So we have to listen to our own radio programs sometimes to make sure that we were really saying this is the bottom in 2009, and we aren't just thinking of that now.
Well,
but we have them up on the web. You can look back.
See, and I have newsletters.
Listen and.
That are sitting out there, and I wrote those, and I can look back and see what I wrote, and we can listen to what we said.
It's on the record.
It's a little scary to make forecasts like that. You know, of course, I also have made a couple of other forecasts.
I think that was more of a nowcast. We were saying it is the bottom now.
Yeah, but we were forecasting that the market would recover, and it would recover very nicely.
Yep.
And recently, for those of you who've been listening, I've strongly suggested this is just the beginning of a long-term recovery. Now, that's not to say that we won't have corrections along the way. We will. I'm confident at some point we'll have pullbacks. I also am confident that the economy and the market are recovering very nicely.
And when we look at earnings in the market over the same time period that we were just talking about, since 2009, we're talking about not really being back. If we go back to 2008, for instance, this is great. You know, 2007, 2008, we had the previous records that we're now breaking again. If you go back to those times and you look at the earnings of the stock market and you look at the earnings today, we're still way below, if you count earnings in, the price-to-earnings ratio, we're below what we were.
Oh, yeah. The market's still cheap.
The market is still below that, even though it's back to breaking records. People are saying, oh, no, breaking records, the time is short. We're going to be on our faces again. Well, the problem with that statement is that the earnings have come up very quickly. We're not breaking records if you put earnings into it.
Yeah, it's the stock market is still undervalued. The bond market is still overvalued. Now, those are very general statements. I'm sure there are some stocks that are overvalued. Apple is way the heck down from where it was when it was really overvalued.
It's still, depending on if it's a growth company or not, is the question. Are the earnings going to be able to keep
Apple just did
something like that.
Really fascinating.
By that, you're grimacing as you say fascinating. So
they did something they have never done before. They increased the power and storage capacity of their MacBook Pro and cut the price at the same time. They have never done that before. Anytime that Apple included more capacity, more capability within their computers, they've always raised the prices. This is a very interesting reversal.
It's a sign of the times, actually. It means that they are reaching the point where what they create is a commodity on the market that other people can compete with, and therefore they have to lower their prices. Where, if you think back to before, when they came out with a new product, there's no competition. They can put whatever price they want on that.
I don't know a lot about Windows 8. You know a lot more about it than I do.
Been learning.
But my guess, strictly looking at the pricing, is that Apple considers for the first time that Microsoft has come out with something that actually may be competitive to what they have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I've been using Windows 8 now for 2 days. The first day, I was transferring things back and forth, and I had some frustrations with it, trying to figure out what was going on. Now that I know how it works, it's a lot easier than Windows 7.
Question is whether it will work as seamlessly as it's designed. If it does, then Apple is going to have some problems.
Yeah, they've got Apple still has Microsoft beat as far as intuitive, how easy it is to use. Microsoft, you have to figure it out, and sometimes key combinations are used when a mouse isn't available. But they made the software in Windows 8 to be compatible with touchscreen for tablets and things. And I'm using a PC. I'm not using a touch screen. So it's a little bit less intuitive to me because I've got to figure out how to replicate some swipes and things of fingers and with using keystrokes. But I think the future is going to be, I mean, why don't we use the screen for all kinds of things on the computer? Well, because that was expensive before. It's not so expensive now.
Of course, there was another small announcement on Friday.
Really?
Economic announcement. Nothing significant.
Yeah. What is it about Jobs?
He's dead.
Not Steve.
Okay. Oh.
Talking about other jobs.
Yeah, 236,000 new non-farm payroll jobs.
Every time the media comes out with one of these big headlines, and there's one in the newspaper you're looking at, there's one on the headline that I'm looking at over here from the Washington Post, they mention orthodontists in the middle of these things.
They say, what?
U.S. economy adds jobs, but braces. Braces.
Braces.
These orthodontists are getting involved everywhere.
So the United States, well, I'm sure.
Orthodontist jobs are being added.
Actually, that's one of the most, it's one of the best job market areas in the country. I mean, if you want to be an orthodontist.
Yeah, it's a horrible joke, but it's a
slight
truism.
Interestingly enough, among all the major professions, guess which one has the shortest life expectancy?
It's not a very fun profession.
I don't know what they're doing, but it apparently is pretty intense because they have a short life expectancy. Anyway,
payrolls rose and unemployment dropped.
Well, that was not coincidental. That is because now another thing that happened though is about 130,000 people dropped out of the labor force.
Do you think they coordinated with like a flash mob where they just all decided to drop out at the same time?
I think it was a non-flash mob. I was looking at those numbers. And where the breakdown, and about 80,000 of those people aren't going back to school or doing anything of that. And this is just a very short period of time, obviously. But about 80,000 people, when they were surveyed, stated, nope, I've just given up looking for a job. I'm never going to find one.
Ah.
They're not going back to school. They have just quit looking. And
that must be a nice bit of luxury.
Well, in some cases it is, and in some cases it's a pretty bad deal. People are stuck somewhere and don't feel like they can get out of it. A lot of them, of course, are older people. But, of course, another group of people, of that there's about 130,000, obviously, there's about 50,000 who said, I am going to go back to school and learn how to do something. And it's one of those things that we watch very carefully, at least I watch very carefully. Jobs are becoming more available, but there are people who are drawing unemployment, extended unemployment, and who particularly are less than who are older people, meaning probably 50 years of age and older, who are dropping out of the workforce at this point. I happen to have spoken to one recently, so I had kind of a feeling for it. This person was a medical transcriber. In other words, when a doctor has an appointment or does something, they speak, they record it, and then somebody writes it up.
Right.
And it's not coincidental that that particular field is being taken over by computer technology. Voice recognition is coming to the
really
point
good.
Now. There are specialized programs. They're relatively expensive programs, but not as expensive as a full-time employee.
They outsource that job to a machine.
You got it.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing is going on across the economy. Oddly enough, that's one of the reasons I'm very optimistic about the stock market.
Because it's being outsourced?
Because productivity, despite the fact that we saw a temporary dip in productivity gains recently, and that, by the way, is not unusual. I saw some articles that said the stock market bulls are threatened by the drop in productivity. No. When you hire a lot of people,
which is what we've been doing,
your productivity goes down because you got to train them.
The people that have been so productive before have to stop what they're doing and go, it would be so much faster for me to just do this, but instead I've got to show you what to do. Mm-hmm. Get over here.
So you've got a person who isn't being very productive because they're in training, and by definition you probably have some other people who are not being very productive because they're training the person who was just hired.
So you have productivity drops right after massive gains as hiring starts back up.
That's right.
If you're a small business owner, is cause for much frustration as you go about saying, all right, we're at capacity. We're not able to keep at this rate anymore. My people are working so hard. I've got to hire someone. And then you slow down everything because you hired someone.
And of
you're
course,
going, I'm more expense and less productivity. Rah!
Then there was another little issue in that we are now 1 week past the date.
Of the
which 150 years from now will be recorded as the sesquicentennial sequestration.
Right. And I will
sequestration
say,
sesquicentennial.
Yes. And I think that
sesquicentennial.
Yes. In 150 years at the sesquicentennial, I think Bigfoot will have parties
you,
over
right,
it.
Right. So and you got the Sasquatch.
Sasquatch celebrations of the sesquicentennial of the sequestration.
You could take the of the out of there, actually.
Silliness. All of it.
Yeah, but it's happening. It's on the books. It's going to continue. And if you're reading today either the Temple or Killeen paper, you will note that there are things that are already in the works.
Yeah, there's lots of different parts of federal aid that are being stopped right
and
now.
And they're going to probably, as we forecast, by the way,
it's going to have a bigger impact in Central Texas than it will elsewhere.
Yeah, and I was communicating with someone at a construction. An engineering company in the area that employs quite a few people and does a lot of work with the government. And they have been notified that even if they bid on a new job, that the government has 6 months to back out of it.
Oh,
because
well, that's nice of them.
What happens is if by the end of this fiscal year, which ends at the end of September, for the federal government, the sequestrations have not been eliminated, then
the big cuts start.
That's when you will see the big layoffs among the people who are the rather large number of people who do contract work directly or indirectly with regard to Fort Hood. And that has a ripple effect because they're going to then try to sell their houses and move somewhere where they can find a job. You're going to see less spending at local stores. And then, the orthodontists are involved here. The school systems are bracing
braces
for some big cuts. And this is interesting because the requirement at the state level for a certain number of no more than so many students per teacher and all the other requirements.
We still have to stick to those requirements with less money.
Right. The federal government is cutting the aid to schools, which, by the way, one of the biggest recipients as far as per student is concerned in the nation is Bell County.
Bell County is, and parts of Copper's Cove, so we've got
over into Coryell, the Fort Hood area. So it is going to be by 6 months from now, we very well could see, we've got to see something. Either the property taxes have to be raised, which I don't think people will accept, or we're going to have a decline in education quality, a pretty significant decline in education quality in the public schools in Central Texas, which long-term does not bode particularly well for us.
No.
So it's there's for lack of a better term, challenges.
Yeah. And now we can come in and say some things that will hopefully make our listeners happier than what we've just been saying.
The stock market will probably go up through the whole thing.
Right. Well, that's probably true. And when we're talking about job gains and unemployment down and payroll up, that when we're talking about sequestration happening, you know for a fact that those new jobs are not in government. These new jobs are, you know, when unemployment is down and payroll is up, it's because the jobs are being added in the private sector. We're not talking about government jobs. And if you look at the size of government that's going on right now, some people should be very happy. Well, most of our listeners would be very happy, even though what that means is that we're going to experience more pain here in Central Texas. The government's getting smaller.
That is a fact. And despite the fact that the number of private payrolls still hasn't quite recovered. It's the highest since October 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But the public sector is still shrinking. In February, government payrolls, total government across the board, fell by about 10,000. And that's the fifth straight month of declines. I love to say that. That's really tongue-tangling. We got a break for commercials.
Yes, we do.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. And we should say our names, too, just to let people know who they're talking to.
Jeff.
Jake. Both of us are bald and McClure's.
Mm.
You can tell us apart, because Jeff is wearing a plain shirt and I'm wearing a plaid shirt.
But all McClure's are not bald.
No.
No.
No. My sisters are definitely not bald. My mother is not bald.
Right. But so, that's cool.
Both of my brothers are bald.
But your nephew's not?
No.
Okay. Well, we got a break for commercials, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
And it was talking about payroll. Before the sequestration,
mm-hmm.
The federal government has cut jobs over the last 4 years by 37,000 people. Now, that's a pretty fair number of people.
That's more than I employ.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I'll remember that. Most agencies of the federal government, branches of the federal government, have now imposed a hiring freeze.
Mm-hmm. Which is very cold.
And they're going to be furloughing workers one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
In
many places, yes.
Which amounts to a significant significant pay cut and expenditure drop. So we're going to see some significant cuts in federal spending and significant cuts in federal aid. The education areas in Central Texas are going to really feel it, and that includes higher education, with the tuition assistance program being halted for the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Central Texas College, Temple College, University of Central Texas, which is now called something else.
University of Central Texas?
The 2-year program that is CTC, part of Texas A&M. No, part of Texas
Tarleton,
A&M, the Tarleton
yeah.
thing. A lot of that, certainly not all of it, but a lot of the students that attend those courses are active duty military personnel.
Yep. GI Bill and things like it.
Well, what they were using mainly was the tuition assistance program, which is a different animal from the GI Bill. And the end result is, over the next few years, next year or two, we almost certainly are going to see a very significant impact here in Bell County. So I'm not saying that to be pessimistic.
No,
I am, but I've had people ask me about investing in real estate in this area.
Probably not a good idea.
I would just be very cautious at this point. There's a lot of places in the country where job growth is accelerating and there's a shortage of housing.
Austin is a massive boom town right now. People are putting houses on the market and they're being purchased the same day. That's the kind of market in Austin. But Austin has a tech business and a very highly educated workforce. And I live there, and so do a lot of other hippies. I wouldn't say other hippies. Hippies,
mm-hmm.
We'll say that for our listening audience. That is a very different situation than what we're going to see here in Central Texas. If you're thinking about buying land or something, it might be nice to, you're going to have low prices, but the question about recovery, about when the prices would be back in Central Texas.
When we get another good war.
Yeah, that hopefully isn't going to be for a while.
And it's just one of those things that I think it's very important to bear that in mind if you're making any plans here in Central Texas locally. Now, if you're obviously living here and you're living in a house and you have no intention of moving, obviously you're going to be in pretty good shape. However, this probably will not be greatly different from what we saw in 1991. It won't happen quite as fast, but I strongly suspect we're going to see a very significant reduction in not only the indirect money, which is what we were just talking about, but probably starting next year, we're going to see troop reductions on Fort Hood. And once we start seeing troop reductions on Fort Hood, then it will become a lot more like 1991. And I really do expect that, as we are standing down from some major wars and the emphasis is being changed to the Navy and Air Force from the Army. It's one of those things that folks just kind of, if you're thinking about making a long-term investment here locally, you want to be very cautious about that at this point. Now, that not to say that we won't recover, not to say that we're going to go into a depression or something like that, because that's certainly not true, but it's going to be a little bumpy here in the near future.
Yeah. We are smack dab in the center of what the biggest areas of cut. One of the issues here, and this is something that I have a lot of agreement with the concept of what's going on with the sequestration. I think the timing of it is wrong, but I think it's a good thing long term to have the government spend less money. The timing of it is bad because of where we are in a recovery from a recession and the fact that we have very slow growth in the economy right now. So making these cuts now, while it seems like that would be the time, you know, in an American family, if income drops, you lower your spending. In a government, that's when spending should increase. And I realize that's counterintuitive and it's backwards, but most economists will agree with that. It's just the long-term spending trends need to go down. And so sequestration, I actually kind of like the idea of it. One of the problems with it, though, is that while it looks like it's evenly balanced between defense and discretionary spending, the location of defense across the country is very clumpy.
The location of defense?
Yes, defense. Defense is right over there.
It's by the border.
Yeah, it's right there. No, when we talk about cuts in defense, it's going to take place in a relatively few places. It's going to be Central Texas. It's going to be Georgia. It's going to be the places that have big military installations where the discretionary spending cuts that the Democrats don't want to see happen are happening across the board all over the place.
And there's a very interesting little quiz in the Wall Street Journal today. I think it was today. Let me look at the date on it. Whoops. Went the wrong way. Anyway, yes, March 5th, there was a little quiz in the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
And it said, question one, the federal government is spending a larger share of national income than at any time since World War II. True or false?
I know that answer.
What is it?
False.
Okay. As a matter of fact, over the last 30 years, the federal government has spent as averaged spending 21.1% of the GDP. And over the next 12 months, according to the Congressional Budget Office, we are scheduled to spend 21.7. Now, were the economy up to its normal capacity, in other words, there's what's called capacity utilization, were we still not operating
there
below full capacity?
Using those fancy words again.
Then it would actually be 20.6. So in other words, if the economy were humming along with its normal unemployment rate and its normal utilization rate of facilities and everything else with the average over the last 30 years, then the federal government spending right now would be below average. Now, there's another
a percentage point and a half below average.
Right. And there's a reason that seems like, and the debt is going up. I mean, you know, and the reason is, the federal government revenue again, Congressional Budget Office, over the next year, is expected to be 16% of national output.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last three decades, the average has been 17.7. So really, and I know that a lot of people are not going to like to hear me say this.
It's just facts again.
But these are just the numbers.
Spending is not up. It's
spending,
down right
spending
now.
Spending is actually pretty much on average where it has been for the last 30 years. So why do we have a big deficit? Well, we're taking a very significantly less amount of tax out of the economy.
Revenue's not coming in.
Which really shouldn't be too terribly surprising because for the last several years, the House of Representatives has been digging in its heels and refusing to
raise taxes.
And this is after a major tax decrease, two of them under the Bush administration, a third one actually that came along during the recession. So we had three major tax decreases in the so-called tax increase that occurred in the beginning of this year was very minor in comparison to that. So we're really in a position where the average, if we look across the entire nation, we're paying a smaller percentage of our gross domestic product in taxes to the federal government than we have actually since about late 1960s, early 1970s sometime. We paid more before that because we were trying to pay off the debt from World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And we paid more after that because we had a lot of things we were trying to do.
Now, let me do a translation of what our listeners just heard.
Okay.
From the listener perspective.
All right.
Them McClure boys want more taxes. Where's the
no.
big red button with the buzzer that says no?
It's just a simple fact. We
are spending. We're not saying what we want or don't want here. We're just saying here we are in history. When it gets into the economic spectrum of taxation, stating a fact, people try to interpret it based on a political party. And if we say we're spending less money in taxes than we have on average for the past 50 years, people think we say we need more taxes. Well, the reality is very, very different. Again, I think spending needs to come down for the government, and taxes will eventually need to come back to the average. However, doing it right now is a really bad idea. And that is the summation of what we're doing. And I can tell you from personal experience that the payroll tax increase and the change in the amount of money that can be deducted for medical expenses is having a direct impact on my spending this year.
Right.
It's costing me right around $8,000 this year, the increase in taxes and the disability of taking disability stuff. I have a lot of medical expenses, and when those come up, I'm not going to be able to deduct as much of them. So I'm feeling the pinch where a lot of our listeners aren't going to feel a direct pinch from the changes in the tax code this year. And I'm still looking around and saying, at some point in the future, if the government is going to get out of debt, not just coast with less and less debt being added, it needs to get out of debt, which means revenue has to come up. And this is, you know, that's not something I appreciate. It's not something I like. But if we go back to an analogy of a household, if you're spending more than you're making, there's two ways to get out of it. One, you cut spending. Well, if you can't cut spending beyond a certain amount without cutting into your ability to stay alive and function as a household, then you've got to increase your revenue. And the only way government can do that is by raising taxes.
There's actually a piece of good news here, and something we were talking about back in 2009. And I think it's significant. I said back in 2009 that there were two major socioeconomic crises that the United States needed to deal with. One of them was the cost of health care, and the other one was the public education system. And I said, the healthcare situation will probably be fixed first because at least there's a debate going on there. Whereas in public education, there's really not a debate. It's just we are going to keep the same socialized system we've always had, whether it works or not, and we'll just pump more money into it. And that's just where we are. I mean, there's no groundswell in Central Texas that says, or anywhere else, that says the public education system stinks and we've got to fix it. Although I might add, the cuts in federal spending might generate that exact result. but maybe it's healthy there. But the health care, this is something fascinating. I just read this morning. The spending per recipient of health care services in the United States has been dropping since 2009. Not a lot, but it's been dropping. And this is the other thing. Now, I think this is temporary. The total percentage of gross domestic product expended on health care has declined since 2009. Now, notably that in the previous 30 years, when you adjusting for inflation and everything else, the percentage of our gross domestic product we were spending on health care tripled.
Well, you also have to notice this we're going to get very geeky here for just a moment. In 2009, our GDP was lower by far.
Right.
And we've increased the GDP faster than the spending in healthcare has gone up.
That may not
be a big indicative thing.
But that didn't even slow the train down before. What we saw was 30 years of rapidly rising to where it tripled in 30 years. The percentage of GDP expended on healthcare. And I know a lot of people are not going to like me for saying this, but the cuts can be traced back to one major thing. There was a bill passed in 2009 by the Congress, and it has effectively cut the cost of healthcare.
Yep.
And as far as I can tell, I have not seen any declines in quality. Now, is healthcare going to stay down? No, because as the baby boomers age, we are going to get ill. We are going to have to receive more healthcare. But at least we've got a system in place now that's going to take a look at that. And education is the next big challenge. I don't know how we're going to handle that one, but we are going to have to change it.
Oh, here's an idea. What we should do is do a numbers game where people throw in a bunch. Well, that's the lottery. Oh, we already did that.
That didn't work so well.
Let's try racehorses. Oh, wait, we already did that. Let's try.
Throwing more money at education is not the solution.
Not the solution.
There is a solution.
We need to figure out how to spend smarter.
Yeah, throwing more money at healthcare was not the solution. The solution is we've got to relook at our entire system, and there's going to be a lot of resistance to that. And like I said,
racehorses in the hospitals you can combine education, gambling, and healthcare.
I think the cough medicine you're taking is probably having an effect
right
on your brain. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We're at the end of our first hour. We have another hour coming up. We are a wealth management firm, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm, and we're fiduciaries. We work on behalf of our clients only. And if you'd like to call us off the air, locally we have voicemail at 947-1111. Obviously, we got people to answer the phone during the week, 947-1111.
You can also reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, and listen to podcasts. And until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.